You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It's Carrie Underwood singing about tornadoes. Leaves her drunk dad to get ripped out of the house by one. Yeah, she obviously is not happy with him in the song. Joining me is Michael Musselman. Gunner, what's up?
Yeah, what's going on?
Nothing. Listen to this. So, the Commandant was just on for like 72 minutes. I played that interview that we did late last week, and it was awesome. It was awesome. You get mentioned in it, and I told you off the air, but
that's all we thought.
Yeah, that he said the contractor issue at the pool is something that he said, look, I'll write that down, I'll take it under advisement, and if we can improve the contract that allows greater throughput, he said that I'm all about it. And so there you have it, Mike Musselman still making a difference. Hooah. So anyway, that's not what I want to talk about. But no, I'll tell you what, for those who don't know General Nellie, He's a grunt. He is a point A to point B dude, yeah. Man. He is not, when he thinks it, he's going to look at you and say it. And it's fun being around him. It's easy being around him. And he loves Marines. Like most of us. So pretty cool.
He's like a seasoned cocky sergeant. You know, he knows his shit. He's been in a while. You know, he just, we got that arrogance. Not really big arrogance, but he's got, just around him that people like to be around. He's funny.
Yeah, and he's like us in that he's caustic and that he'll argue with you. You know, I start the interview by saying,
"Oh yeah,
would you like to apologize?"
He expects to argue with you.
Yeah, I start the interview like this. Would you like to apologize for the punk ass behavior of the Detroit Tigers in that fight against the Yankees? And he says he's from Michigan, right? He's a big Tiger fan. He's like, "What? No, let me tell you about that fight, Mac."
You start the interview, yeah.
And he goes off.
Start the interview like this.
He goes off on Gary Sanchez running around the pile, punching people. That was so Bush, and they had the thing stopped, you know. And then Betances hits that dude in the head. Like, what is that? That's so Bush. I'm like, it was an accident. He goes, "Oh yeah." So you know everything that comes after that's going to be good, because now he's not being the Commandant anymore. He's just being Bob Neller. But he's a normal dude, and when he hears bullshit, you know, and he tells a story about everybody when probably 2000, coming home after 2003, going back in 2004, everybody had these Hooky Roo t-shirts, right? Under Armour, this, you know, wicker, you know, cool, lightweight. The problem is, well, Mike, tell me the problem with those crazy materials. And
back then, it wasn't fire retardant; it melts your body.
So IDs are exploding, vehicles are on fire. Yeah, and
yeah.
This stuff's melting to your skin, and so Marine Corps takes steps to ban them. And issue
even some of our own stuff that was issued initially would melt too.
Right.
So it wasn't just that stuff.
So Nella tells a story where he's Deputy MEF CG in 2006 when Mike's at 3-5 and I'm at the 5th Marine Regiment. And Nella comes out to do battlefield circulation one day, you're not supposed to wear your Poly-Pro anymore outside the wire. And he looks up in the gun turret. There's a gunny in there. He's got his Poly-Pro on. Now, he's a brigadier general. He looks up and he says, "Do you have your Poly-Pro on?" And the gunny looks down and says, "Yes, sir." And he says, "Get out of the vehicle. You're not going either, or go change right now." So he's not afraid to be Sergeant Neller, man. And I love that shit. So
no, and you should be. I mean, it kind of angers me when people think that would be below him.
Right.
It's never, nothing is too low to to be a leader. You know, and one of the things, one of the classic moves that I've ever seen, really, is I was walking with Joe Dunford, and he was a three-star then, and we were in Quantico. I forget where we were, but it was a couple of us talking. And we were all talking and paying attention. The general goes out, goes off the sidewalk, goes over and picks up some trash inside the road. And we're like, oh, no, we got it. He goes, no, I can carry trash. I mean, it's not no big difference. I do this at home. I can do it here. You know, but he's picking up trash. And so now we're all kind of making sure that we're looking for trash because we don't want him to keep constant. But that's just the way he is.
Right. No, you see
nothing below him.
You see much made of, you know, people talk about the Secretary of Defense does his own laundry. He carries his own bags. He's always been like that. He's never separates himself from doing the things that everybody else does and being treated different. And adamant about that. Adamant about that.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, he doesn't.
I mean, Mattis has quirks with him that he likes to do himself, and he doesn't like that servitude thing.
No, not one bit. And, you know, like, you know, he has an aide, and aides do all kinds of different things, but not with him. Aide performs official functions. After that, aide, you know, he goes to sleep. And he does his own, he does his own laundry. He folds it. All that stuff. So, interesting stuff. I asked about social media. I said, you know, in your testimony, you said that you weren't really that active in social media. And I said, do you think leaders, Marine leaders, ought to have Facebook accounts, Twitter accounts? And interestingly enough, he said yes. He said, that's where I'm Marines.
Well, what do you mean interesting?
Well, I mean, a lot of guys, you know, when they say that, and he, first of all, he clarified, he said, look, Mac, I have a Twitter account as a commandant. I have a Facebook account as a commandant. I use both of them. I've learned about it. I've obviously learned more about it, since the online stuff, but absolutely, you know, you should have it. It's part
of another tool,
right,
of leadership. Yeah. It's using technology, you know, so you can influence people through social media. That's leadership. Yeah, I'd expect every leader to have one and understand it, how to utilize it, and capitalize on it. So, yeah, absolutely.
The other thing he talked about was he talked about going to Guadalcanal, and he said John Bazelon's fighting hole is still there. And I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, look, because the ordnance there and stuff, that place hasn't been touched a whole lot, and they're trying to farm it now, so there's a lot less vegetation. You can see now, but the place where he fought from, the hole that he fought from, is there. They have it roped off, and you can go and look at it. And he said, you know, you see where he was shooting. You know, you can imagine the body stacked up that he had to clear that night. And I was like, that's like Valhalla stuff, right? That's like, that's John Bazelon's hole? Are you shitting me?
How did he know that?
What's that?
I don't,
you're calling bullshit on it?
Okay. That's,
see, I'm a believer.
That's
Mike
80 years ago?
Yeah.
Was it 80 years ago, almost?
70, where are we now?
Yeah, 41. 42.
Okay, so 55 and 20. Yeah, the 75th anniversary of Guadalcanal.
Okay, and we're talking about, and that's a jungle where there's an immense amount water and rain.
Sorry, I'm saying they found it. They found this hole. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, you can tell me I got some swampland I want to sell you, Mac.
I don't know.
You're not buying it? You're selling that?
I ain't buying that good, man.
All right, here's what I wanted to tell you, though. I say all of that to say this. So over the weekend, we get a dog. And I named the dog Joe. And my cousin Patty, who listens all the time, she texts me back, you shouldn't make his middle name Gunner. I said, what? She says, yeah, have his middle, like, his name is Joe Francis McNamara, right? I'm Michael Francis. My son John is John Francis. Patrick is Patrick Francis. Jack is Jack Francis.
Wait. We're talking about a dog?
Yeah, my dog. So Joe Francis McNamara is a dog name. And my cousin bombs back. Yeah, his middle name should be Gunner. I'm like,
That dog does not look like a Gunner. But go ahead.
I don't care what it looks like. Like, why are you, like, on a weekend? Why would you say it to me on a weekend? Like, I'm not dealing with him, okay? And now I've got to hear about him? Like, stop it already. My family thinks that Mike is really funny for some reason. I'm like, you don't know him. He's not that funny. And like, oh, no, the Gunner. I'm like, like, you're a fictitious, like, you're an action figure. The Gunner. I'm like, his name's Mike, okay? He doesn't have a comic book already, okay? He's not truly an action figure. All right, let me read you a couple emails.
Believe what you want. Don't hate. Believe what you want.
That
dog is not a Gunner, though. Don't name it Gunner. That would be...
Oh, are you kidding me? Like, that's exactly what I want.
No, that dog is like, no. I mean, it's no bigger than a badger. So, I mean...
Badger bigger?
That's a small dog, yeah.
My son threw a badger on the did I say my son? A person I know threw a badger on the ice at a North Dakota-Wisconsin game. A badger's a ginormous animal, man. They're huge. Place went crazy, though. The North Dakotans like hillbilly stuff. So you throw a dead gopher or a dead, you know, when Minnesota's in town, the place goes hysterical. Absolutely hysterical.
Now they throw stuffed animals on the ice.
Not in North Dakota, they don't. I got a
hillbilly.
Exactly. I got a email question for you. Hey, Matt, could Mike give us a Botox update? Heard him talk about it a week or so ago, and I'm just curious. Once he has the shots, do all of his symptoms go away? Does he deal with anything between the time he gets his shots?
All of it goes away.
Miss.
And so, almost the end of 3 months again, and then it comes back with a vengeance.
Mr. Botox.
Yeah.
Mr. Botox.
It's a good relieving. I mean, it's a reliever. It feels good. I'm looking at the flooding, man. This is still going crazy.
It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse, and then once this water stays up for a long period of time, that means if your levees haven't been maintained, and they start cracking, then you go to a different level. It's Houston is not going to be the same for a long, long time, because they're expecting.
Look at Air Force One.
Yeah, Mike, Houston's expecting what, another 20 inches of rain before
between now and tomorrow, right?
Between now and Thursday.
But
skies
I'm
look
watching
clear.
Air Force One yeah. come in, and the skies look clear as all get out. Well, it's landing at Corpus Christi.
Oh, is that what they're flying into?
The Navy base down there, right?
Right. Hua?
NES, Corpus Christi.
Let me read you another email about a conversation we had yesterday. Hey, Mac, I listened yesterday, and I find your concept of employment of the active duty component in support of domestic humanitarian missions pretty interesting. I thought about it last night as I watched the video, which is horrible. The Guard is just getting there now, and it would have been nice to have had active duty elements or somebody over the weekend that could help when this thing really got going. Do you or Mike think it would compromise the active duty military's mission to be involved in major disasters for a relatively short period of time? I think your concept of a week and then doing essentially a relief in place with guard units is a good one. I would be for it. I'm curious about the downside of it.
Okay.
Gunner?
All right. First of all, we're not going to criticize anybody's reaction time.
No, no, it's just the way it is.
But you look at this in comparison to Katrina,
No, I mean, night and day.
Night and day. So, but what has to happen, if this works, if this could do this, what has to happen is kind of like Fifth Marines has a mission to fight wildfires.
Right.
So, in the past, they would have to keep that training up. So they would do things, we would train, and we'd have that kind of gear staged, ready to go. But everybody knew kind of what their drill was. So if you do this, use active duty, and you pinpoint bases that are near epic places that flood, you know. Let's use Mississippi, Alabama, those type of states.
Florida.
And you pick bases, but then you train units, active units, for boat rescuing type stuff or other things, because really, if you get people down there for no reason, then there's nothing for them to do. So, I mean, you look at this, you know, everything that could possibly go right went right. They pushed in, they got there, they couldn't do anything until the storm kind of tapered off. But I watched the media, and they're just slant, every chance they get, they turn slanderous of, oh yeah, people were waiting hours, you know, to be rescued. Okay, first of all, the people were warned to get out.
Yeah, but the mayor,
the smart one,
the mayor told them, think twice before you do it.
Yeah, and the smart ones did. And then the argument comes back, and well, they didn't have the money. They didn't need money. They were getting free buses, busing people out prior to the storm up to here in the Dallas area and in Irvine and other places like that to get them into rescue. So all of that was there. They decided to ride it out. And so, it's one of those things where, you know, I'm not saying that they put themselves in the situation, but give me a break when you start criticizing the response time. You know, but you got to go, if you're using an active duty component, you got to put them on a tether, and you got to do training throughout the year. So when you give them a mission, you know, if it's truck drivers and they just got to drive trucks in and drive people out, that's easy. If you're doing rescue and you got to have the equipment, but then that's the training and the certification, you know, it's not just jump in a boat and go, hey, let's go, because, you know, you'll end up the guy in the water too. So if you know, you got to know what you're doing, you got the proper equipment.
You know what? That's a good point. And I would further amend All Marine Radio position on this to say, you know, for instance, truck drivers, all you're going to do is drive trucks. You might be driving them through, you know, hub high water or whatnot, but all you're going to be doing is driving trucks and helicopters. If you're not trained to do, you know, search and rescue, all you're going to do is transport. So we're not going to, you know, so we're not going to, as Mike's saying, and he's exactly right. If you don't train for it, when you try to do it in harm's way, and then all of a sudden you got to press it a little bit, your instinct is going to be to help, which might not be the appropriate instinct, and you're just going to make things bad, and that's not a good thing. So, right. So, but I do believe, though, that the active component. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that all we're asking you is to fly, say, medevac from an LZ or fly, transport people, from point A to point B?
Intermediate.
Right.
Externally.
Externally lift water in pallets, to the Superdome and pallets of MREs. If all we're asking you to do is stay in your lane stuff, do you believe that compromises the mission of the active duty military?
No.
Yeah, I agree.
No, not at all.
And the other part is they would love to do it.
Yeah, they absolutely would. And a lot of these guys, you know, do it. They volunteer in their off time to do this type of stuff. So yeah, absolutely.
You know, one of the other things that that you'll hear, you know, in our experience, Marines talk about is you'll see guard guys responding to a disaster and things like that, and you'll hear guys say, "Man, I wish we could do that. That looks really cool." When you see them helping Americans that have been knocked on their ass or sideways by natural disaster, it's like, man, that's the coolest. That looks like so cool to be part of the Guard and get to go into communities and go and help them and things like that. And but active guys can't do that. Yeah. So hey,
no.
I reached out to some people I know at Pendleton. To get, see if I can find somebody that was, involved in what do we call it? It used to be called DISCA or something like that. Do you remember that?
Right.
It was a civil, military major earthquake. General Myatt, kind of was the founder of it.
It got changed all over the place. I don't know what name it went under now.
Right. So anyway, but that's what it was a civil military look at what could be done in the very early phases of these kind of disasters. So I find it interesting. But I will tell you what, I mean, I think Texas has done as good a job as you can do from what I've seen. And the other part of this that is hard is that most people are doing this for the first time that are decision makers, right? The mayor of New Orleans,
It's been 61 years or something like that.
Okay. The mayor of New Orleans, he's not trained for this, right? And people are telling him, oh, last time we evacuated the city, you know, we had 5 fatalities on the road as people evacuated, you know. And so, you know, so let's.
And then the governor wouldn't stay out of the mayor's business.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You had a really bad situation going on there. And then, what cracks me up is even today, unless you read the true history of it, even today, the Bush administration gets the rap for this, the bad rap.
Katrina?
If you look at the underlying what really happened, you realize that it was the mayor, the Democratic mayor of New Orleans, and the Democratic governor of Louisiana.
Who's the mayor in jail now.
Oh, yeah. Coincidence?
Not. I talked with a friend of mine who's the city administrator in Grand Forks, North Dakota. He was the director of public works up there after the flood up there. And so it's interesting, you know, all the things you go through after a flood like that. And he was talking about. So I was asking him these questions, and he told me, he said, well, that would be a paradigm shift, because the way we do emergency management is we don't request additional assets until ours are maxed out. And
right.
I said, yeah, that you guys got to get past that, especially where you're not – this is not a 1-in-75-year event. When you're talking about a 1-in-500-year event – why wouldn't you have units alerted, be ready to respond within 6 hours? And it would minorly inconvenience them, but you would have that capability within hours of this thing starting. And he said, you know, that sounds like a great idea. And I mean, we would be all about it, because our problem is by the time you exceed your capacity of fire, public works guys with dump trucks and stuff like that, and police, nobody else can get there in time. It's going to take days for the next groups to get there in numbers, because they've got to mobilize, they've got to move, they've got to set up, and then they go to work. And that just doesn't happen overnight. He said, wow. He said that would be a sharp departure from what we do now. I said, yeah, what you guys do now is too slow. For one of these events of biblical proportions, like what we're seeing in New Orleans. And then he made a comment. He said, you know, my fear for New Orleans is, you know, those levees staying high and if not New Orleans, but Houston, and the damage that'll occur when levees start breaking, or, you know, we saw the thing in California this last year where that dam, they thought it might go, and what happens that then? And he said, so he said, you know, Houston's not going to be out of the woods in this deal for, you know, for probably another week, and because you're going to be crossing your fingers, looking at your levees, right, and because those things, as they get soggy. Let me read you an email, Mike, and then you can email about New Orleans. The fact that the Bush administration got any blame for that at all, I believe, is simply a function of the media and ignorance. Clearly, the city did not request it. We watched the city flail around the Superdome, and now they're going to turn and point a finger at somebody else? What a joke. How could you be sitting in your emergency operations center watching that video and not send water on a pallet down there and food on in terms of MREs down there? That stuff went on for, what, the better part of 2 days? It was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, and none of us will ever forget that picture of all those school buses flooded and not used to move people. The other part of this that really pisses me off is seeing senior citizens. If there's a group of people that ought to be evacuated, it's seniors that go to other assisted living facilities.
Yeah, people suffering from mental health and senior citizens. People can't, that are more difficult to actually defend for themselves, you know, defend for themselves when it comes to those types of situations.
Did you see that picture?
So, yeah.
Did you see that picture of those senior citizens sitting in wheelchairs? In like waist deep water.
Here in Houston?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, Mike, it's. I'll text it to you. It's
Yeah, Mac, are you sure it was Houston? Because you know what? One of the networks got busted. I think it was CNN. It might be MSNBC. They got busted for using foul footage of Katrina. No shit.
I know.
They were showing some things, and it was like, and then finally they put it on the internet, and they had it on the internet to talk about it, and someone busted them out and showed that that picture was taken during Katrina, and then they came back and said, well, it was just file footage of trying to show the under. No, that's not what you were trying to depict here. You were trying to depict, you know, again, your own point of view, your agenda items and everything else, and they since then taken it off. You got to be careful, and I'd be surprised. Really, they had the senior, because from what I understood, a lot of the senior citizens in the assisted living houses, they were not voluntarily. They were voluntold that they're going to might have be relocated.
They were going to leave. I will text you a picture of the one that ran. And it went viral, and so there's a number of stories about it on the internet. So, but yeah, it's pretty disgusting. And here's to me what when I see it, here's what I think of. Somebody owns this assisted living facility, right?
Yeah.
And so if I move all these people, is somebody going to reimburse and bring them back? Is somebody going to reimburse me?
Yeah, that's what these grants are. Yeah, federal government grants. All that stuff, man. There's so much money here now.
No, nobody's going to reimburse.
Oh, there's stuff for Ben Carson. Yeah, they will.
No, they won't.
Look, there's Ben Carson. Ben Carson's on the tarmac. I like that.
You like
that's
that?
That's right, he's HUD.
The president's wife's wearing her FLOTUS hat.
Yeah, you know what she looked like? She looked like Charlie from, was that the call sign Charlie from Top Gun?
Stop. Why would you reference that movie? Stop it.
That's what she reminded me of.
Oh my god. I was
she looks great.
I know. Montana Man's chiming in. Your family is misguided in relation to Gunner. I know. My cousins, they think he's hilarious. And they tell me about him, like, oh, you know, I was listening the other day and Gunner said this, and I'm like, okay. I feel about Gunner like the Gunner feels about the mule discussion. Yeah.
No.
Yes.
I'm a lot more interested in a mule.
They're like, oh, God. I'm like, oh, stop it with the gunner talk already. Why? He's funny. No, he's not. Okay. So, yeah.
No, he is. He is. He's a service guy. You're so intimidating with your bald head.
Yeah. The secret guys. They think, you know, middle I think age, sometimes they think they're good. I think, why do they always look so conspicuous, though?
So the whole design, why glasses and everything else, is they want, when you see someone like that, your automatic is to look at them. You know, to wow, that's kind of, look at these guys. They must be Secret Service guys. You want to look at them. So they key on people that are not looking at them because their position of authority. When you see guys with microphones in their ears and sunglasses and with all the same height and orange suits and shit like that, you look at them and you're like, man, these guys are federal agents or they're somebody. So you look at them. But normally people that are prone to commit crimes, you know, repeat offenders, do not look at position of authority. They turn, kind of keep their eyes down like, you know, as long as I don't make eye contact, he's not going to see me. So that's who they're keying in on. And part, you know, they wear sunglasses so you don't, they can move their eyes without you noticing they're looking at you.
Oh, yeah, like they don't move their head. They're like, somehow they're shifty.
Yeah, there's the C5. They don't show the C5, but there's the C5 that had all the limos in it.
They're showing it. Boom.
Yeah, they normally never show that thing in the support plane. The C5 that gets there about an hour, 2 hours, shit, maybe in a day early, got all the limos in it.
That's right. The hold on, I'll read you an email. Mac, your kid threw a badger on the ice at a hockey game? Somebody I know threw a badger on ice. Where did you get the badger? Two women shot it at Stump Lake in Minnesota. I think Stump Lake's in Minnesota. I'm not sure. I was talking about the new North Dakota had a guy donate like $100 million, and he was going to give half of it to the university and build the hockey arena with the other half. The university said they might change after they said they wouldn't. Then they said they were thinking about changing the nickname of the University of North Dakota from the Fighting Sioux, which is a really cool name, to something else. And he said, really? He goes, look, I'll stop construction. Just let it fall down. I don't care. And calling the president of the university named Dr. Charles Kupchella. And he's calling him Chuck in this letter to the editor of the newspaper. Dear Chuck.
Yeah.
So he says, look, I'm not donating any money to the university. I'm going to use $100 million. I'm going to build the hockey arena. This thing's like the Taj Mahal, right? But unlike the old building that I saw, one of the things that sold me about college hockey was seeing North Dakota and Minnesota play in this old building with a flat roof. I thought the building was going to explode. It was awesome. The hate was like everywhere. These two schools have been playing since what, the 40s or something like that. And North Dakota, they don't have anything other than their hockey team. And now the North Dakota State football team has done really well in the FCS. But they don't have anything.
Hey, wait a second. So is North Dakota going to change their name from the Fighting Sioux?
They already did.
Oh.
Yeah. Hostile and abusive.
I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's a university, for Christ's sake.
Right. Oh, you should have seen it. It was awful. And, you know, it's like me wanting to name Alpha Company, Third LAR, Apache Company. Right? Yeah. It was because the Apache warriors were the most fierce warriors in the southwestern part of the United States. And so, you know, but they said, no, you know, there's characters that get made and it's derogatory and blah, blah, blah. And then I said, yeah, but I'm Irish. You know, there's all kinds of stupid things done with leprechauns when Notre Dame plays. But I don't look at that and say, oh, you know, oh, that's a comment on me. I know they're making fun of the football team. Oh, well, you don't know what it's like because you're not a minority. Like, okay. All right, yeah.
And leprechauns are a minority, by the way.
I didn't think of that. But
and
yeah,
no one can speak for them. We should speak for them.
Leprechauns? They like being leprechauns. It's what they do. They like gold.
Maybe, No,
they're like rainbow.
They've always been portrayed. Yeah,
drunk.
They've been portrayed as small, green, drunk little elves.
Hostile elves. Anger management problem.
Yeah.
Maybe we should try to change that because that is hostile and abusive.
Sets a new continental record of 49.32 inches. Wow. 50 inches of rain, man.
That's incredible.
That short of the day. That's crazy. 50 inches.
Well, and again, it's not over. I mean, this water, you know, you're going to see spillways get filled as dams. You know, the functional part of this stuff, if everything holds, you're going to see that, and that's going to be crazy in and of itself. 50 inches of water, though. I remember Roseau, Minnesota had 20 inches in one night, and it was crazy up in flat farm country. That water doesn't have anywhere to go. Is Houston flat, Mike?
Yeah.
No, that ain't good. But anyway, I was talking on the radio that the new building hadn't had a gopher or a a badger. That's not good. Thrown onto the ice during the game.
They watched it box.
Yeah.
There was a boat sinking right there.
I know. Two guys walk up and grab it and they yank him out. It's not good when your boat sinks. So these two women show up at where I worked. And they walk in, they see the receptionist, like, we want to see Mac. Like, can I tell him your name? No. So somebody comes back and gets me, like, there's two women that want to see you, but they won't give their name. I'm like, okay. So I walk up, I'm like, hi. And they're like, we have something for you. So I said, okay. And I go out, and they have an ice chest with ice in it, and on ice, they have a badger, for God's sake. And this thing is like a medium-sized dog. And so the person that came out to smuggle this thing in the arena had a pheasant vest on. And, you know, it's like he looks at me and says, how am I going to throw this thing? This thing's like 30 pounds. I'm like, suck it up, man. And you got to hit the, you got to get it over the glass, too. If you hit the glass, there's going to be a riot, okay? And so... as it turns out, it was Halloween, which was a good thing. And so this person is in the student section with his pheasant vest on backwards, the badger in front of him, and as it so winds up, as the introduction gets done, the Wisconsin team is right on the blue line in front of him. So this badger goes flying onto the ice, and the place went hysterical. It was it was awesome, so. Anyway, there's your
why would you drive your truck into that type of water?
Well, you know what? I was thinking about that. There was a picture yesterday of a person on top of their truck, and they had a kayak oar. It's like, where were you going with all this water? And what did you honestly think you'd make it through? Obviously, you did. But when you see a river that's like a half mile wide, don't you think you should turn around? Your car can't do that.
Yeah. I think I can afford this.
Yeah. No, I can make it. There's a part of me that respects that. But
no,
not
there's
your...
not a part of me at all that respects that. That's just plain stupid, man. When you think that because, my pickup ride's high, I can go through this, you know, and then all of a sudden the water's coming up to your hood and you're like, okay, now just a few more feet there, Marco, we can do it.
How about if it's coming up to like the center of your wheel? Would you be as harsh about that?
Center of your
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay, good.
Center? Yeah, if even it came up to, like, just the bottom of the door jam,
yeah,
I'd be fine.
Okay, all right, good.
But once it starts getting any deeper than that, no, why?
I thought you were judging me for a second.
Well, I always judge you, but...
No, Paul Kennedy, who's now the head of MCRIC, Marine Corps Recruiting Command, he's a first lieutenant. We're teaching at the basic school, and we go out to, like, recon a training area on a Friday. And I have like a new Pathfinder, four-wheel drive, beautiful. And we get to this I'd call it a creek in Quantico. And it's a fairly wide one, not sure the depth. We wanted to go on the other side. And I said, I don't know. And he looks at me and goes, buddy, if you don't drive through this, you don't have a ball in your body. I said,
all right.
Really? Okay. So I have to drive. I have I have to drive through, right? And
And they have no brain.
Oh, man. And we get high-centered. And I just looked at him, and he says, buddy, we've established that you have balls, okay? I said, okay. So now we have to walk. We're in our utilities, and this is back in the day when you can't go off base in your utilities, which I think we still can't do, but not so much anymore. So, and we have camouflage paint on because we just came from a problem. So we go walking up to this lady's house after walking a couple miles, knock on the door. She looks out the window. She won't open the door. And we said, could we borrow your phone? She says, sure. So, and a phone book. So I call a tow truck service, and this dude with a ponytail comes out, right? Rural Virginia, Quantico area, Dumfries at the time. So he comes out, and he's got a .38 pistol on the bench seat of his tow truck. And Kendi and I hop in, and we kind of take him down there. And I said, hey, Leroy, who knows you're out here? He says, nobody. And he said, well, they dispatched me. They sent me out here from the gas station. I said, well, what happens if you never found us? He said, well, then I wouldn't have found you. I said, well, do you get in trouble? He said, no. I said, how much do you get paid to do this? And he said, just my hourly rate. I said, what are you going to charge me to yank my car out of this creek? He said, $80. I said, how about this? How about I pay you $40 in cash and we call it good? He said, all right. And so we go down there, we pull the Pathfinder out, pay him $40, boom, done deal. Leroy can add. It was awesome. So, hey, you know how this is? You know how you know, Mike, this flood is getting worse? It's bad. It's really bad. Because the pictures that you're starting to see now are of the homes of wealthy people. Okay? Now,
right.
Let me tell you about how wealthy people build homes. They'll tell you, yeah, you know, they, first of all, the land they buy, it's not in the floodplain. Okay? And then what they'll do is they'll grade their property so that they'll increase the elevation of the house by, you know, another 10 feet or whatever. And what you're seeing now in Houston is those houses have main floor standing water. And they're nice homes. It's not just like the ghetto tends to be in levee walled areas, low ground that nobody was going to build in. So they build slums and get in ghetto land in levee land. Now the pictures that you're seeing, it's not levee land anymore. It is rich people land, and water's not supposed to be in that place. So. Yeah, the pictures are crazy.
Oh, I'm looking at them right now, and they keep showing the plane, I mean, the boats. They had a seaplane. I mean, it's like, what's going on here? Yeah. Oh, it's like a dump truck. That'll work.
Yeah, anything with high clearance.
But this is the stuff that starts pissing me off. You know, I'm looking at these, and there's a lot of children, you know. If you have kids, okay, listen, if you have kids and there's a natural disaster looming your way, don't be an idiot. They're not old enough to make a decision for themselves. They're relying on competent parents to make those decisions for them. They will succumb, to, you know, different types of dangers that you will overlook. Don't put your children at risk. When I see these kids being pulled babies, like this one, you know, toddlers being pulled to safety. It's like, what were you thinking? And again, people are going to say, well, maybe they don't have the resources to get out. They volunteered to get you out. The shelters are free. The food is free. Everything is free. You know, if you are single and you have no children, and you're just a dumbass, then yeah, go ahead, write it out. But I mean, that just would drive me absolutely through the roof if you got to a place where you would sit there and look and go, you have three children, what were you thinking to put them in harm's way? They rely on you to make good decisions.
Mike, but you know, and I'm not a Florida guy, but you have people do this all the time. Instead of evacuating, we're going to ride it out. We've ridden them out before, you know, and most of the time, their predictions are wrong. It's all the blah, 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 blah. But
why risk it? Yeah, I mean, it's right. This is different.
I hear you.
This is different than putting a quarter in a slot machine and taking a gamble.
This is different than
throwing $2 to the gas station man and filling out, you know, a card for something or scratchers.
Lots of people don't do it.
Lots
of people do it, you know, in tornado country, they do it. A lot of people do it in hurricane country. You know, we're going to stay and ride it out in spite of getting warnings. Hold on.
Wow, look at that picture of Houston.
Here's another email. Mac, I've been watching the news this morning as well. It sounds like you and Mike are reacting to pictures. And what I'm seeing is all kinds of improvised vehicles that are out and about snatching people that have high clearances. In relative to civil military work, it certainly would be nice to see the guys from Fort Hood with their six bys there loading people and not seeing kids put into the back of pickup dump trucks.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that certainly merits further discussion, and I'm just picturing those motor pools, motor pools, and they're just sitting idle as this thing happens within a couple hours' drive. It is.
I will say the difference between a big Oshkosh 6x and a dump truck bed is the dump truck bed is probably more secure. I mean, the 6x beds are solid steel too. I mean, they're just a steel bed. You lay in it, you're not comfortable. Yeah, you could put benches in there, but I mean,
right.
You could put folding chairs in a dump truck. But no, what I'm looking at, I mean, and that we don't know. I mean, the whole Texas National Guard is out right now.
Right.
That's a big area down there.
Right.
You know, and it's, they're doing what they can, and they're probably in certain areas. And again, this is just news coverage, so.
Right. No, I'm with you. My point, and it was my point that came out of Katrina, which was, you know, that thing was handled poorly from the get-go, and is there a role for the active duty component to play in this early phase? And I think there is. Mike had a great point. Don't ask to do things we don't do because we can't do them. But if you need us to drive trucks, we can do that. If you need us to transport people from here to there, we can do that. And we can contribute that right now. Maybe you don't have to use as many dump trucks as you might use, or maybe you can go use those for something else. But again, this thing, again, 50 inches of water, the chances of this thing getting worse are good, and so... they're not out of the woods yet, and hopefully there's no other weather coming behind this that will make it even worse. And a lot of times when you see catastrophes, big ones, it wasn't simply the original incident. For instance, in Grand Forks, they had record snow all spring, but what sent it over the top was the thaw happened too quick and then it rained. It's like, we can't do this. That's too much, right? So if you live up in Minnesota, North Dakota, the way it thaws is important. You want the temperature to be maybe in the 50s during the day and at 20 at night. So the water moves and then it freezes. So there's a slow, steady migration towards the river. When it warms up too much, not good. Too much water going too fast.
Yeah.
And then when it rains on top of that, That's you can't do anything. It's too
much. See, here's a classic stupidity here. You know, the reporter, obviously people are out there workers trying to go out and do some good, and the reporter will stop to them and talk to them for, you know, a couple minutes, waste their time. Oh, what are you doing out here? Oh, now what have you seen out here? One thing that just these pictures are showing me, and it's sad to see too, you know. You know who pays the most for natural disasters? Who pays the price?
The
poverty.
Yeah, people. No, their lives
are poor.
Yeah.
You know, you look at how the where they're at, where their homes are located, you know, and they're the ones that rock the, they pay the heaviest burden. And it's really, man, I was looking at some of those photographs of the camper panning through Rockport. It's like, wow. I couldn't even imagine. And, you know, the horrible thing about water, this kind of thing is, even though your structure is still standing, it's done. The whole thing's got to come down.
Yeah,
you have to start over again.
What you have to do when you have main floor damage like that is that, and I know because I've seen a bunch of it, is the drywall's got to come off. All that stuff has to come off. I mean, you essentially gut the house. The wood dries out. The wood can, you know, the wood will be okay.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Again, yeah, unless it's sitting there for an extended period of time. But if it's up and down and in a week or so, you know, but it's, and what is that? That's additional debt from FEMA. There's nobody coming to give grants. And that's one of the shockers. It's like the citizen's like, well, where do I go? What do I do? Well, FEMA's coming and they have money. It's like, okay, what does that mean? And so then you go to this meeting and you keep waiting for somebody to tell you that there's going to be grants and assistance. And you walk out and you look and you say to your wife, so we're going to take on a lot of debt to fix the house. And then some people just can't do it. Right.
Or low interest loans.
But it's still debt.
Low interest loans. It wipes these people out.
And oh, people my God. And, Mike, I could tell you stories about that. Low interest loan, right? And so, for instance, in North Dakota, Minnesota, I mean, you have people that are good people. They take debt seriously. Okay? So they're high-performing loans. And so once your bank makes the loan, your bank then takes it and bundles it and sells it in the secondary market to somebody else. Now, you want to do something else with your house, but you need the person that owns your FEMA loan, you know, to agree to subordinate that loan to so you can get this other loan. And these people said, no, I won't do it. Like, what?
Yeah.
And then you had to go through this whole explanation of how these loans get bundled, how they get sold, why they won't allow you to do these things, because your loan's one of the high-performing loans in this pool of loans that they buy. And people just would, they'd look and they'd say, make it stop, man. My house flooded. I had to throw all the pictures I had away because they told me there were chemicals in there and I couldn't keep all of our family heirlooms, you know, wedding pictures, videos, it's all gone. And now this,
right.
It's horrible. And you're right. And somebody sent me an email. Mac, one of the things I read last night was there's a lot of people in Houston that left New Orleans and settled in Houston and never went back to New Orleans. And now this. And I would venture to say that a lot of those people are in the spectrum that Mike's talking about. They're at or near the poverty line, and it just seems like a pretty cruel event on them.
You're right. There's a lot of people that relocated out of Katrina that relocated to the Gulf Coast down there in Texas. And now they have to go through this again. I mean, it's like, you know, I was in New Orleans years, you know, 4 or 5 years after Katrina, and I was driving down by the levees and there, and the homes were still deserted.
Right.
I mean, it was kind of really eerie. It looked like a mount town in Fort Ord when they had that big one up there those days, because it's just this huge, you know, town with buildings and homes and everything and streets,
gone.
But they were completely vacant.
Right.
Not a soul.
And what happens is, you know, when they begin modifying the levee, you can't build in the floodplain until you, I have incredible, honestly, technical knowledge about floods, right? And recovery. Until they certify the permanent flood protection, which may take them 8 or so years, you cannot build in an area that's designated a floodplain. And so it just sits there. And what happened in North Dakota was they tore down all the homes. They were bought out by the city and the state and the federal government, and they tore it all down. And so you'd walk down there, and now this big green space, There's sidewalks, there's driveways, there's walkways up to homes, there's trees. You can see the lots, and there's no homes anymore.
Right.
And it's just spooky. You know, it's just spooky. Like, it all went away. And it's awful. It's awful. And so again, hopefully, you know, everything, all the infrastructure holds. This water rises and falls. And then, but you're right, Mike. The people that do pay the heaviest price are people that are near the poverty line, and it sucks.
Yeah, and it is. It's just for them to recover is a monumental task.
Well, they won't, right? They'll hopefully go.
No,
they'll go
won't.
They'll pack what they have, and they'll go start again someplace else.
And that, that's horrible, man. That's horrible.
It means funding new jobs.
Hopefully that'll be addressed. Someone will point that out, and then we can take care of those type of people because, you know, that is just, again, it's just horrible. I mean, so today, for the good act today, I'm going to go donate blood. There's a blood bank for this for the Houston hospitals for people that are injured.
When you're heading down there. But you know what? The other thing, Mike, is, you know, in the past few weeks, we've had to watch these crazy groups on the right and the left of what America is, and they have dominated the news coverage, right?
Yeah.
You know, when these kind of things happen, you see the best of our nation, right? And again, I'll say this. I'm sure there's people out there looting and being idiots. But 95%, 99% of the people involved in this, what are they doing? If you're watching any footage, what are you seeing? You see people that are black, white, brown, men, women. You see the whole thing. What are they doing? They're loading other people into trucks. They're helping people walk through water. They're taking people on a boat. You know, and it is the best part of America, the whole melting pot, and when there's a crisis, the way people tend to come together. And I'm really tired of seeing, like, the bullshit that was on TV yesterday that went on in Berkeley. You know?
Yeah.
You don't like what somebody's going to say, so you're gonna violently stop them. That's as un-American as the bullshit that those people are saying. So.
Yeah.
Watching this, so it makes your heart feel good that about how many good people there are. And I wish that news media would stop putting that stuff front and center, but we know they won't. So anyway.
Yeah, and then this guy, Shepard, I can't stand him. The way he's been covering this has, like, been a joke. You know, like, he's been making fun of it. It kind of pissed me off.
There's a scroller on Fox that says this. 11 on the south part of Houston, this is what Mike and I have been talking about, has been breached. Mandatory evacuations have been ordered.
Columbia Lake.
Holy shit. That's, again, the whole thing about water and infrastructure and all of that. And you know what? It's stupid stuff. Like, once you build levees, if you don't have an anti-gopher program, I mean, as stupid as that sounds, guess what happens to your levee? It's got holes all through it. And then when the river rises or the lake rises, where does that water go? It goes through all those holes, and that begins to destabilize. And so, shit. All right, man.
Yeah.
Go donate blood. We'll keep our eye on this. Have a great day, Mike.
Hey, real quick, if you want to listen to this, there's like it's an app called the Zello Walkie Talkie app.
What's it called?
And Zello Walkie Talkie app. And then you join either the Texas Navy channels or the Cajun Navy channels. And it's kind of like live feed of all the stuff going on down there.
Zello Walkie Talkie. And is that a phone app or a computer app or both or what?
I think it's a regular app for, like, your phone.
Okay. All right.
And then go to the Texas Navy channel. And you can actually hear live stuff.
I'm writing it down. All right. I'll post that in case anybody's interested. All right, man. Thanks for the visit.
All right, bye.
See you. The Gunner. More of Almarine Radio coming up next. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255. 8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it on a Tuesday. My thanks to the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Bob Neller, for coming on today and spending about 70 minutes with us. So I'm not sure how to say thank you, but when the guy who runs the Marine Corps joins us for the second time, I want to thank Lieutenant Colonel Eric Dent for making that happen and coordinating all that. While I'm doing it, I want to thank Bob Nielsen and the people at Turner that have been such great sponsors of All Marine Radio, as well as the people that have sponsored us for the longest. Yeah, Military by Owner, Battle Mug, and the Global Soft Foundation. I mean, those people have been behind us from when we started, and All Marine Radio getting ready to do better things here shortly. So, very cool. And it's interviews like this that, you know, you truly enjoy when you get a chance to sit down and talk to him. Honestly, the hardest part is the outline. What do you cover? There's so many things, you know, that you could talk about. Yeah, I mean, you could interview that guy for 7 hours and not feel like you touched on enough of it. So, but anyway. Hurricane Harvey has set a new U.S. record for rainfall from a tropical storm system. That's what we're talking about. So, president in Houston right now, and the governor's there. I don't know that I've seen the mayor yet. FEMA's there. So, talking about what will be the federal response. So, president pretty somber, as you might expect. And the news here within the last 15 minutes got worse in Houston. And that is that they have a levee that's getting ready to break, which is going to make things worse. So Mike talked about an app. And so before I get off, let me tell you about it. It's called Zello Walkie Talkie, Z-E-L-L-O Walkie Talkie. And that's the name of it. So that's how you say it, Z-E-L-L-O Walkie Talkie. And you can down that. Zello is a free push-to-talk application for smartphones, tablets, and PCs. It's lightweight, easy to use, extremely fast, blah, 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 blah. And then if you click on that, if you download that, the channel you're looking for is called Texas Navy. If you monitor that, you'll see different search and rescues that are ongoing, and you'll actually see what's going on the ground, so... Keep those people in your thoughts and prayers. Floods suck. Recovery takes about 10 years. And that's why a lot of people just leave too much. Send their keys to the bank, and that's it. Tomorrow, Grant Newsom's going to join us. We didn't talk too much today about the... About the crazy shit shit for brains is doing in North Korea. Launching intercontinental ballistic missiles over another nation is crazy. honestly, it's an, in my opinion, it's an act of war. So we're to assume, right? Unless we have some kind of intelligence that tells us it's not nuclear tipped, the assumption is it's not nuclear tipped. Is that the way you want to live your life? Is that what the people of your nation have to endure? I mean, it's just crazy shit. So anyway, Grant Newsham will join us tomorrow at 7:30 Pacific time, and we'll talk to him. He wrote a column recently about the U.S. of McCain. We'll ask him about that as well. So have a great afternoon. This program repeats itself momentarily. You'll hear the Commandant of the Marine Corps. And so whatever you do, if you're just tuning in now, whatever you do, do not touch that dial. The interview is a great interview. Nothing to do with me, as usual. But have a listen. So, again, can't say thank you enough to Lieutenant Colonel Eric Dent and the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Bob Neller, my former CO at 3rd LAR, and a friend of mine. Have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow on a Tuesday. All Marine Radio, out.